Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Hi, I'm Imri, the host of the Wannabe podcast, the podcast that takes you from where you are now to where you want to be in 30 minutes or less. Thanks so much for joining me again today. I just want to leave a quick note on the beginning of this episode because I always do this at the end and I'm not sure you always hear it. So if you are enjoying this podcast, please, please, please do share it with a friend and leave a rating or review on iTunes if you are listening via the Apple Podcast app. The best way for this show to grow and to continue is for me to see that you guys are engaging and finding this content valuable and that you think it's worth sharing with others too. So if you haven't done so, just drop it in a little WhatsApp message like, hey, I think you'd really like this episode. It doesn't need to be this one, but it could be others that you've really enjoyed. So I'd really appreciate that because I'm coming to the end of season one and I really want to make sure that the show is growing for season two and that it's really worth all the time and effort that goes into it. Finally, another reminder that Shout Out Live Radical Women, the UK's very first Women in Podcasting Festival, is happening on July 14th. And we are really, really, really making sure that we invest heavily in the upskilling of talent at this festival. So not only will you have a good set of live shows from myself, Not Another Book podcast, the BBC will be running a panel with their No Country for Young Women. Chidera Egeru, who is also known as the Sunflower, will be running a confidence workshop. We'll have Anita Rani, Kat Molesworth, Sophie Hagen on panels. It's going to be an excellent day from the best people in podcasting, broadcast, and audio, sharing their knowledge just for your benefit. So make sure that you come along, you come and enjoy a workshop, you enjoy the speakers, get entertained and tickled by a live show. Head on over to solifestival.com. When you register on the website, you'll be sent £10 off your ticket. So don't waste any more time. I think we've already well over 100 now, and we've got like less than 200 to go for sure. This week, I am joined by Ruby Ariuku. She's one third of Vamp PR, and Ruby has worked on some fantastic UK movie releases, including Girls Trip and Black Panther, which was just a showcase of excellence. Vamp PR tries to ensure that Black influencers gain the same access to junkets, or press junkets if you don't know what those are, and mainstream press activities as their white influencers. So she has done a phenomenal job in just a very short period of time. In today's episode, we talk about the difference between marketing and PR. We talk about working with your friends, how you can build your self-confidence using drama techniques, and we talk about what to do when you don't enjoy your job. Let's go. Who did you want to be before you became who you are today and why?
Who did I want to be? I had a funny childhood of wanting to be a superstar. And so I thought I wanted to be a singer. I thought I wanted to be an actress. I thought I wanted to be a presenter. All between the ages of like 5 and 15, or a bit later actually. So I think I wanted to be in the spotlight for a while.
Yep.
Until I realized you need a good talent to be able to do that. So let's leave that, you know, in the dreams. But I think more than that, I think those professions, I guess I associated those professions with being confident and like being like a boss. So So like, I love the Spice Girls, and like, I watched a lot of American TV where like females were like the protagonists. And so I think it was more than just wanting to be in the spotlight. I think I just wanted to be as confident as those women were and those stars were, and have the impact that they had back then. People, I guess superstars, that's such a weird term. Celebrities have a different impact nowadays than they did when, you know, 15 years ago when I was a kid. So I think back then there was no social media. So you were a celebrity, and the weight was on your shoulders just based on what you were doing on TV and in the newspapers. There was no social media to fall back on or anything. Yeah. It was just that. And most of the things you would see would hopefully be positive, and you just see them being so sick at whatever they were doing. And I wanted that. I think I wanted to have an impact and be able to inspire other little girls. And so I think that was, you know, the draw for me. But I think that's who I wanted to be when I was a bit younger, and I realized that it was more about the traits that came with that rather than the actual profession.
Yeah, I hear you on that. It's interesting that you mentioned that there was no social media back then. I actually cannot even really remember a time about social media, but so it was sad. A beautiful time.
It was amazing. It really upsets me. I always say that when I have kids, I really hope I meet other mothers who don't want their kids to have iPhones when they're like 7.
Oh my gosh,
and like be like, I want us to all, I hope we have like some sort of mothers club where we're all the same. We're all like, look, social time is 1 hour a week, and you have to play outside like we did. Yeah. You have to do all the normal things that made our childhood so great that our kids will probably never get now. It's so sad. It's really sad. And it's just like, we're almost past the point of doing anything about it. We just have to accept it, which is even more sad. But yeah, I can't remember. I barely remember what we were doing before.
So before you realized that maybe the life of a superstar and celebrity wasn't for you, like, what steps were you taking to fulfill your big ambition to be in the spotlight?
So I went to stage school. I went to drama school and stage school for most of my childhood. My parents put me into drama school because I was really shy as a kid. I was that weird kid that only liked hanging out with, not only, but mainly liked hanging out with adults. That was my comfort zone. I don't know whether it was maybe because I'm not an only child, but my siblings are all a lot older than me. Like 12 years older than me. Like 10, 12 years older than me. So I think I was just always used to being around older people. So yeah, my parents were like, yeah, this is weird. So we're going to be around some other kids. So so I went to drama school, and I really enjoyed it. I liked going every week. And then I went to performing arts school again every week. So I would spending, at one point they overlapped. So I was spending about 6 hours every Saturday in some sort of like performing arts school.
Yeah.
So I was really dedicated to it. I was happy to do that. And I think I knew that it would take some time out of my life if I wanted to fulfill one of these dreams.
Yeah.
And I was called to do that. And I guess I got older and I dropped out, but I was still doing drama at school. And then even when I thought I wanted to go into presenting, I started doing work experience super early. So I was doing a work experience when I was like 15, with like online magazines and blogs. And like, my mum hated it because like, she didn't understand where I was going, like on Saturdays and in the evening. She was like, who with who? What? And like, I had to get them to call her and speak to her. It was so embarrassing.
Oh, wow.
They would be like, okay.
Early days of the internet.
Exactly. So they would think, my mum was like, you could be with anyone. I was like, no, mum, it's work experience. It's so cool. So so I was always really happy. I knew I had to be active to make whatever my dream was at the time a reality. I was a busybody. I was always about.
That's a really good trait. Like, I feel like I was always shy and never did anything. I just stayed. I stayed shy. Stayed in my house, stayed reading books.
I wish I was TV. That. See, maybe I should have done that.
No, it makes you like such a recluse. it's peaceful.
Yes, but
now,
I bet.
I'm like a proper introvert now. Like, I just like people drain me.
I'm that now. I think I spent too much time being around people and being so active as a youngster and as a teenager that like now, my mum's worried. She asked me every week, and like, so you're not going out? Are you all right? So what? No one wants to go out with you?
It's just, you know, it's very peaceful.
I'm fine.
And you get to sleep. It's a very beautiful life.
And I watch a lot of TV, so that's my company.
I wanted to touch on the confidence thing. So as a child, you're shy, which I can definitely relate to. And then performing arts school and drama school are all about like confidence building. So what was your favorite confidence building technique for those of us that need it?
Oh my God.
Asking for a friend.
I guess just, it sounds so cliche, but like being thrown into something that is out of your comfort zone. So I at first hated going to drama school because a lot of the kids were quite a lot older than me.
Yeah.
So it was quite daunting. And doing, I wish everyone could go. I wish every shy person can go to some kind of drama school because they make you do those activities where you're all in a circle. And you have to do like improv or something.
Oh, and God.
Once you do a couple of those, there ain't no time for shy. Like you just come out of your shell and it's really good. It's a really good confidence builder because I guess it has to be led by the right kind of people to make you feel open and know that whatever you do, like there's no wrong answer. There's no wrong way to do it. But I think, yeah, being thrown into something that you're not used to and then also being told that whatever you do is okay will really just like settle you. And because I think the main thing about people that are shy or have confidence issues is that fear of like the unknown and fear of supposedly doing something wrong. But if there is no wrong answer, then surely it doesn't really matter.
It's kind of like what would happen if you knew you couldn't fail.
Exactly. Anything. And with improv and with like sort of drama stuff, one of the improv things, you know, those ones where you're in a circle and then someone starts a storyline and then someone else has to come in and change it.
No.
Oh my God, it's so cool. So like we'd both go into the circle.
All right.
And so we'll have a character like you're a farmer. And I'm the farmer's wife.
All right.
And we're starting a conversation and someone will say stop. And then you would replace one of the people. And like you have to feed off the last thing that they said or the like the last thing that we're talking about and start a whole new conversation.
Oh, wow. This sounds really hard.
It's really easy when you get into it. And it's really fun.
What was the scariest thing you've ever done in your life?
Scariest thing I've ever done. Probably, it's probably between two things. It's either when I went to uni because I studied a course that I had never done before and had never done anything to do with it. So I did media communications and most people who have done media would have done it like at A level or something and I hadn't. And like, it was even a requirement at my uni and I didn't do it. But I took the risk because I felt like the course was for me. And I thought I'd be good at it, and thank God I was.
Yeah,
thank God.
Really?
So maybe I wasn't as scared because I was quite sure it was the right choice. Maybe that wasn't the scariest. I think the actual scariest one probably was quitting my job last year. So my full time job, my 9 to 5, because that was a risk. That was a big risk. Like having a paycheck every single month coming into your account, you know exactly how much you're getting paid. I get a little bonus 1 month and you get promotions and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You have that security to not having that security and not having that same paycheck every single month. And not even just the money side, just the security of having a job and just feeling like you know where you're going.
Yeah.
And you know there's going to be some sort of progression, especially I got my job straight out of uni and like I knew that, so I was a junior level, so I knew the next level was, you know, above that, and you know you move up.
That progression is really obvious.
Yeah, and you don't have that when you work for yourself. So yeah, that was definitely the scariest thing I've probably ever done. Yeah, I'm still scared of it now. So
no, you're doing really well. I know that feeling. I got fired sometimes. I was ready to go. It was really just waiting. I was just biding.
When
my
was
time.
It?
So it would have been April 2000 and where are we now? 2018. So April 2016. I say I got fired. I'm going to say it was fired because just for ease sake, but I was ready to go. Like I was ready from like maybe the January, if not December. I was like, this is finished. Like this is over. I'm just like literally just holding on for dear life just so I can have enough money saved up to pay my rent.
Okay.
I was literally fighting for just rent money. So I was like, we already know where this is going. I know I'm leaving. You know I'm leaving. We both know how this is going to end. So yeah, that was a really scary year for me. So I can definitely relate to like not doing it. But then again, I've not worked full time since then.
Wow. And it's been, see, it was a blessing.
And I have not been homeless.
Well, amen. Touch wood. Amen.
And I have paid my bills.
Amen. So everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, there's been some tough financial moments.
Oh boy.
We've all been there.
Well, it's actually funny because I was fired too.
Were you?
And it's weird that that probably maybe should be up there as one of my scariest moments, maybe. But I tend to just forget about it. I got fired. Very few people know this.
No one knows that I was fired. Okay. I think two or three people.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was fired from my first placement job at Disney.
Look at you now.
It was the saddest thing that has ever happened to me in my life. Which is probably quite dramatic. Sorry. But well, I was distraught. I was distraught because I thought it was my dream job. It was like, hello, Disney.
Yeah.
Like, dream company, dream at that time I thought was my dream job. Like, so overwhelmed, and I was fired within a month.
Oh wow.
It was very uncalled for, but it doesn't matter, I was still fired. So and similar to you, I was crushed. Like, they really crushed my confidence. I felt they made me feel like absolute crap, like on the bottom of your shoe.
Yeah.
After you've been doing some real work.
Yeah.
Like, I was crushed. That was probably the first time I was like depressed. I was like 19 or 20.
Oh, bless your heart. Because that's so young.
It was during my 1 year placement year.
Yeah.
So it was like, I told uni, like, oh, I'll see you next year because I'm about to go on placement year. And I was fired within a month. I was like, well, I can't go back to uni now. Can't go back in September. Everyone was expecting me to be at Disney for the year. What do I do?
Yeah. What did you do?
I got another one at Universal.
Oh, well then, you know, that's a glow up.
It was... honestly, if there was anything that reignited my faith, it was that, because it was crazy. I was looking for a job for about 2 weeks and I got my interview with Universal, and then I started like the next month. So
that's really good. So how was life at Universal?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Universal.
Yep. Universal was amazing. It was hard work. Oh my God. I've never worked so hard in my life. But it was like a once in a lifetime type opportunity.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worth it.
It's actually the reason why I got into PR.
Mm-hmm.
Was one of the main reasons. So I started off in the marketing team, and about 4 months in, it wasn't feeling right. I was under a lot of pressure. I developed anxiety during that year as really bad anxiety. So I was off ill a lot and going to doctor's appointments, trying to work out what it was, not knowing it was anxiety at the time.
Yeah, that sounds about accurate.
And then obviously then not knowing about it made it worse, and then I couldn't do my job properly. It was terrible. But you know, even aside from all of that, it didn't feel like the role wasn't quite right for me. Mm. And I'd been talking to one of the PR girls to see what they were used to see with all the things, the cool things they were doing. And I was like, oh, if you guys ever need any like help with anything, let me know. And then I think it was like my 3 month sort of meeting with my manager, and she's like, okay, so what sort of things do you want to get involved in over the next couple of months? And I was like, oh, like, if there's any opportunities in PR, let me know. And she's like, okay, cool, I'll let you know. About a month later, there'd been some moves around in the office, and they were like, well, the PR team want an intern.
Oh, nice.
You want to go there, over there instead, and we'll get someone else to replace you. I was like, yes. And it all just was perfectly aligned. And so I worked for the PR team. It was, okay. The good part of it was, no, let's start with the bad. It was terrible. It was terrible, but it was really hard. And my team were all, there were three white blonde women.
That sounds really accurate for PR in, yes, my mind.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That's exactly what I imagine.
Three white blonde women. They're all really nice, but they'd been a team for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I came in not white, not blonde. Still a woman. Yep. But it was, so that was really a something. We lived very different lives, and I came in as a very different sort of entity. And then I'd never done PR.
Yeah.
Not properly anyways. I'd done like bits here and there, work experience. But they were, had been a team of three for a long time. And the reason they needed interns is because they do too much work for the three of them.
Yeah.
But we still did too much work for four of us. Like, yeah, there was so much work that we did. And I guess having someone from a junior level on board meant that they put a lot on me.
Yeah.
They were like, okay, everybody do this. And it was so much. And so it was really hard.
I have a question, because I work in marketing and I don't know the difference between marketing and PR. So what were the differences? Because you started off in marketing, like, I like that what PR's doing, but what was the difference?
So, okay, so I work for the home entertainment team. So it's all DVDs, Blu-rays, streaming
boring,
thing.
Actually, but
I mean, to be fair, obviously it's not got the glitz and glamour of, you know, theatrical releases.
Yeah.
But it was still pretty cool. Like, right. Yeah, I got to like consult and choose like what the front of a DVD would look like.
Oh, that sounds
and like all
fun.
The, yeah, all the posters that would, like, all the advertisements that would be a part of that campaign. So that was, it was really cool in the end. But so the difference between the marketing and PR team for that would be the marketing team will come up with, yes, the look of the DVD, what's, you know, how it, literally how it looks, like what font and, you know, what color, what pictures are used. And then the ad space in like newspapers, and well, they're called pack shots. So like the actual images of DVDs are called, and Blu-rays are called pack shots. So you choose the pack shots that would be in newspapers and magazines, and the pack shots that would be on billboards. You know, you see those huge adverts.
PR
falls under marketing. That's the main thing. Like marketing is an umbrella, and there's loads of things underneath it, and PR is one of them, like social is one of them.
I wanted to ask really quickly, just an aside, which has nothing to do with anything besides my own curiosity. What do you think of the rise of the influencer?
So I have to be careful what I say, because my job is working with influencers.
It is, yeah.
a big part of my job. What do I think about the rise of influencers? I think it's good. I think in a nutshell, it's a good thing. And the reason I think there was such a huge rise when there was because a lot of people just lost that confidence in celebrities. But then on the flip side of that, recently influencers have, I guess, adopted a lot of the things that celebrities were doing that we didn't like. Which like allowed, what? I guess, the, you know, promoting things that
you don't believe
or, you know, you're just doing it because you're getting a paycheck. And I think that's where the influencers have to be very truthful and careful of their own brand. You know, hopefully if they're doing things right, and if, you know, the market's right, they should only be promoting things that they believe in. And hopefully their followers believe them and, you know, can trust them, because, you know, a lot of people really look up to these people and, you know, spend a lot of time of their day engaging with their content. And they don't want to be tricked and they don't want to be fooled. They want to see if you're promoting whatever it is, you genuinely like it and you're giving me your honest opinion. So I think with the rise, there's a lot of new responsibility, I think, for influencers. I don't think there was as much at the beginning because it was a new thing. And so I think it's definitely a good thing. I think it allows brands to reach wider audiences. Mm-hmm. It allows brands to talk to their audiences, allows audiences to be represented as well. So, you know, what we do as an agency, we go to the brands and be like, look, you've got this huge audience that you're not talking to. These are the influencers that we would pick and we would use to help you reach that audience, and vice versa. We know the audience and we're like, okay, right, we are the audience. Obviously, yeah, we're three black girls, so we're like, we're the audience. These are the influencers I would look to and want to hear from and want to hear their opinion on this particular brand.
Yeah.
And so we're that bridge. And I think, yeah, it's really important for influencers to know their power and their influence of being an influencer, and not take it for granted.
I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I like that you guys focus on black female influencers, because yes, almost nobody does.
Exactly. Like, honestly, that's how we started.
Okay. Forgotten often.
It's really bad. That's how, and it's still, we're not finished, clearly, because yeah, it's still happening. But we started because we were seeing like the Zoellas and all these girls, and we're like, we're just as great. Yeah. We start trends more. Like we're like, we predict the future. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, magic. We're so sick. So it's just, it's such a shame. And trust me, we go through this stuff every day with brands. And I always say, when, like, I will have a job for a while because we're a long way away,
yeah,
from like complete change. But I will know I've done my job, and I can like basically retire when these brands don't need us,
yeah,
anymore. And they're, that's doing,
when your
it,
work is finished.
My work purpose is fulfilled. Done. Purpose fulfilled, when we're no longer like a second thought. We're no longer like something to check box. Like, it's just standard. The same way, mm, you're like, let's pick Sally from wherever. Let's pick Tolu. Like,
yeah,
it's straight. I want it to be the same. It doesn't matter, oh, whether we only make up 6% of the popular. I don't give a crap.
Yeah,
I don't get it. It doesn't matter.
Especially in this London. I hate
in
that
London
excuse.
It's not that percentage. I know that for a fact.
It definitely ain't.
So if we're even going by London, exactly. But if we're going a bit wider, still, I don't want to hear it.
Mm. All right. Finally, what's the best advice you've ever received and the worst advice you've ever received? Let's start worst first, and then best last, because end on a high rate.
Yeah. So worst, I guess, I heard it literally last week, and I wouldn't want to say it's the worst. It's just, I guess, the most conflicting, and the one that the piece of advice we've been struggling with since we started Vamp. Which is around like adapting to your surroundings and adapting to the people that you're in front of in business. And it's a really hard one, because especially in this day and age, the hope is that we should be able to be who we are and let our work speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to go to meet a potential client or meet anyone in ripped jeans and trainers, I'd like to think I could do that and it won't affect my chances of getting that business or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't always the case. And so the other day we were told that you have to adapt no matter what. You have to go in and you have to roll with the punches. So if you're going to a corporate, I kind of feel like it's kind of common sense for some of the things. If you're going into a super corporate office,
yeah,
just for your own peace of mind, I'm sure you wouldn't want to go in scruffy.
Yeah.
You like, even if you don't go in a suit, but like everyone hopefully has home training.
Yeah.
So you'll go in.
You would hope.
You would go in, you know, okay. But I don't think that should change someone's opinion on your ability, especially if it's literally about the results. If I'm providing a service, what I look like should not matter. How I talk shouldn't matter. It's what I'm saying should matter.
Yeah.
But even with that, it's, you know, does that mean I can't use slang? Like, just everyday slang. I'm not talking about, you know, anything offensive or anything. But if I can't talk how I want to talk and you still understand me, but I'm, yeah, comfortable, then that's an unfortunate problem. So I think, yeah, we've been getting a lot of conflicting advice about being yourself or adapting. And we're trying to find that middle ground, like working out what is best. So like, we're three under 25-year-old black girls. how do we present ourselves? We're already at a disadvantage being women, already at a disadvantage being young, because people just assume that we don't know what we're talking about, and we're Black. Like, it's really hard.
Yeah.
And I would say I'm really short as well. So I feel like people treat me like I'm a kid. Like, I'm 5'3". So with no makeup on and everything,
less than me.
I'm tiny. Like, I look like my mom tells me I look 15. So that's already an immediate, you know, bias almost against us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we think about it all the time. So like, we had a big meeting with a huge potential client last week, and I called my business partner in the morning, like, what are you wearing? And she was like, trainers. I was like, thank God. Because it's just, why do I have to even worry? It's sad that I have to worry about it, but you do. So I think the main thing about that is just finding that middle ground. Like, make sure your work speaks for yourself, because don't get twisted, don't go looking, go in a tracksuit and also don't have anything to back it up, like, no work. Like, but you got to try and find that middle ground, like, but don't compromise yourself completely, because then the problem with that is, when will you then go back to being yourself?
Yeah.
And if you do, they're going to be like, hold on. That's not what we signed up for.
Yeah.
So either they take you as you are in your work, or they don't, and then you'll know what it really is then. So that's probably the hardest piece of advice that we've had to take. And then I guess the best piece of advice is a mantra that I live by, which is perseverance breeds success. And it's so simple, and it's, you know, quite cliche, but I heard it when I was about maybe 13 or 14, and I've genuinely lived by it ever since, because it's so simple but so effective, because there's so many times you want to give up, and there's so many things that will tell you to give up. But what's that saying? There's some saying that it's like, what is it? The fails. Like, if you hunt, you fail.
We did this last time. Oh my God,
we did it. And you know what's so annoying? Someone told me, it's mentioned it today. What is it? It's like you fail 100% of the times that you don't try.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes, that.
It's worded better than that. But yeah. And it's literally that. You know, if you don't try, you won't get anywhere. You can only fail if you try. And then there's only two options. You win or you don't.
Yeah, basically.
And then that's it. That's it. And then if you don't, you don't die. You won't die. So you just keep it moving. And yeah, I've definitely, if I hadn't have persevered through like being fired and, you know, really struggling through anxiety, you know, going back to uni after a placement year and going back into studying, like I did terribly in my first term after placement. And like, if I didn't persevere through all those things, I would not be where I am now. Even now, if us as BAMP, if we didn't persevere through the rejections that we have some hard times. Like, for all the good that everyone sees, we have like 10 bad things.
Yeah.
But we don't focus on that, and we just keep, we know that we're going to win in the end. And so, yeah, just persevering, because if you want to be great, you gotta keep it moving.
Again, I just want to say a massive thank you to Ruby, who is just an awesome human, fantastic energy. I really, really loved this discussion. We are going to be talking to some fantastic people over the next few weeks, so please make sure that you are subscribed and that you like things. If you would like to find out more about Ruby and Vamp, you can follow Ruby on Twitter at Miss Ruby Jade and on Instagram at Ruby Jade X. You can also visit Vamp at wearevamp.co.uk. That's wearevamp.co.uk. If you like how this podcast is made and you think that you can do what I do, then you need to reach out to the Shoutout Network by visiting shoutoutnetwork.co.uk. Also, please be sure to come along to the Shoutout Live Radical Women's Podcast Festival. It is the UK's very first Women in Podcast Festival, and you can get £10 off your ticket if you visit solifestival.com. It's going to be on July 14th. It'll be running from 12 o'clock till 10 p.m. Sorry. And so if you are really, really about starting a podcast, upping your skills as a speaker, this is the event for you. There are so many wonderful workshops to just get you, your brand, or your even your podcast off the ground. If you're enjoying this podcast, and you're listening on an Apple device, please do just open your app and drop a few stars on the iTunes review page. It will be so, so, so useful for the growth of this podcast. Also, if you're really enjoying it, do share it with a friend if you aren't listening on an Apple device. It's a really great way to show that the show's growing and that it's worth continuing for season two. And I cannot stress that enough. If I want to get to season two, I need you guys to show me that it's worth putting in the effort. Right. I think that's everything. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.